Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, November 16, and here are some of the stories we are covering. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken visits Kenya this week.
The Americans really want to see stability in the region, because if the region goes up in flames, it might have repercussions in the Middle East and Asia and Europe.
Militants in northern Burkina Faso killed at least 20 military police on Sunday. DRC Constitutional Court says it has no jurisdiction to try a former prime minister for corruption. We'll talk with the mayor of Monrovia as Liberia prepares to commemorate its bicentennial. And Uganda's Bobi Wine calls for accountability for the 2020 police killing of protesters.
Even today, while we are commemorating our comrades that were massacred on the 18th and 19th of November, we stand here without many of our comrades who continue to languish in prisons.
And the role of the internet in building democracy and combating misinformation in Africa. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Secretary of State Antony Blinken is expected to arrive in Kenya later today on the first leg of his Africa visit, which will also take him to Nigeria and Senegal. His trip to Kenya comes at a time when some countries in the East African region, such as Somalia, Ethiopia, and Sudan, are embroiled in conflict. Journalists Amos Wangwa and Herbert Abdi spoke with diplomatic expert Munene Macharia about Secretary Blinken's visit to Kenya.
It's very good that Secretary Blinken is coming to Africa, starting with Kenya. It's all long overdue. He should have done that much earlier than this. But it also shows in the hierarchy of importance, Africa is not very important. So it comes almost when there is a serious crisis or towards the end of the... but it's good he's coming, because it shows that there is increasing seriousness in paying attention to matters Africa. Now, when he comes, of course, he'll be trying to push the American agenda, whatever that is. And I think one of them is that the Americans really want to see stability in the region. And they may be disturbed by the fact that there are commotions in Ethiopia, and you can see Sudan is not very stable. South Sudan has been having a problem anyway. And neighboring Egypt, which is jittery about some strange things, and not to mention Eritrea and Somalia, it's a major concern, because if the region goes up in flames, it might have repercussions in the Middle East and Asia and Europe. So these are starting from a very small area. They can expand into a global challenge. And I think the Americans are worried about that, and Secretary Blinken's visit will try to address some of those concerns, and how the various African states concerned, the three countries that he's visiting, in this region he's visiting Kenya, because it is the pivotal country in this area, as opposed to the others. He then goes to Nigeria, and Nigeria has its own issues or relations, and Senegal, you know, those kind of things. But the main one is Nairobi, and Nairobi is pivotal in East and Central Africa. So he has to be here in order to get the mood and to gauge what may be going on and what can be done, and be done together, the Americans and the Africans. Well, first of all, it's commendable that President Uhuru went to Addis Ababa and was received very well by Abiy Ahmed Ali. The two leaders have common interests in finding alternative ways of finding solutions, ways to lessen the tension in the country.
That was diplomatic expert Munene Macharia of Kenya speaking with journalist Amos Mwangwa and Herbert Abdi in Nairobi, Kenya. Uganda opposition leader Robert Chakulai, also known as Bobi Wine, is calling for accountability and a forensic report on the mass killings that took place during the violent protests following the 2020 presidential elections. Bobi Wine, president of the National Unity Platform Party, says those who killed protesters should be arrested and charged in a court of law. Reporter Mugumi Davis Rakariji has more from Kampala.
Addressing an event organized to remember the infamous November 2020 killings of more than 50 people were protesting his arrest. Uganda opposition leader Bobi Wine on Monday said the Ugandan government bears responsibility for the killings.
Nobody has been apprehended for the November massacre. Even when many cameras captured that, including BBC camera, we know who killed our people.
Bobi Wine was arrested while on a campaign trail in the district of Luka in the eastern part of the Ugandan capital, Kampala, prompting spontaneous violent protests in Kampala and neighboring districts. Ugandan President Yoweri Kaguta Museveni said in the aftermath of the protests that many protesters were killed by what he termed stray bullets. He also blamed the protesters for lawlessness, but promised to compensate victims.
The government will compensate all those who were not rioters, but lost lives in this confusion. Those who are not rioters. If you are a rioter, we cannot compensate you. No way. But if you are not a rioter, but you lost your life, the government, after due process, will compensate for the loss of life. The government will also compensate those who lost their properties, if it can be verified.
Even today, while we are commemorating our comrades that were massacred on the 18th and 19th of November, we stand here without many of our comrades who continue to languish in prisons, the likes of Oliver Lutaya, the likes of Machete, and many others that are in prison for no reason.
Ugandan police spokesperson Fred Enanga says the arrested protesters were accorded due legal process.
The persons whom we were countering were actually people who were involved in riots. They had blocked all roads, they were looting from people, and so on and so forth. And of course, we generated a report where 54 deaths arose from those riots and so on. And I remember there were a number of ammunitions that were recovered.
In a related development, Bobi Wine says the police are blocking him from freely traversing the country to talk to his supporters. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Ruakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
A former prime minister in the Democratic Republic of Congo will have to be tried in another court for alleged embezzlement of public funds of more than $200 million. The country's constitutional court ruled on Monday that it had no jurisdiction to try former prime minister Augustin Matata because Matata was no longer prime minister. Noel Shiani is the leader of the Forces of Change political grouping in the Democratic Republic of Congo. He says the ruling does not mean that Prime Minister Matata is off the hook.
Matata Ponyo, while he was a prime minister, he launched an agribusiness industry to cultivate agricultural products to ensure food sufficiency in the country. The government spent on the project about $300 million. Unfortunately, when the Inspector General in charge of finances did the audit of the project, he discovered that only about $97 million were spent on the project. So Matata Mponyo, as the prime minister at the time, is accused to have embezzled for himself about $200 million. By using different techniques, creating companies in South Africa which belonged to his wife. Matata since then is no longer prime minister, but he's member of the Senate. He's a senator. To take him to court, the Attorney General of the Democratic Republic of the Congo has to seek the waiver of his senatorial immunity so that they can take him to court. That immunity was waived. So Matata was taken to court in the Constitutional Court. Why? Because the law says the Constitutional Court is the only competent court to judge a prime minister or the president of the republic. The issue which Matata's lawyer raised once the trial began is that Matata is no longer the prime minister, but he's a member of the Senate. So the Constitutional Court has to go and review the books to determine if it was competent to put on trial a person who is no longer prime minister, but who used to be prime minister at the time the crime was committed. So today the court ruled that since Matata is no longer prime minister, he does not have to be tried in the constitutional court.
The question is, if the constitutional court cannot try him, does that mean now that he's off the hook?
Well, it does not mean that he's off the hook. He's off the hook from the constitutional court, which had no authority over someone who is no longer the prime minister. That does not mean they are just going to let him go with $200 million and then run away and then disappear. No, there will be another court, which is the Court of Cassation in French, which is below the constitutional court, which has that authority. Now, the question is, when will that happen? That I don't know. I think that there will be a process in the judiciary system where the attorney general who took Matata to the constitutional court, he will have to take him back to the Court de Cassation. I do not know what that entails is how many days, how many weeks, how many months the trial will be delayed. But for sure, he's not off the hook forever.
Mr. Siani, thank you so much. It's a pleasure always to talk with you.
Thank you so much.
Noel Shiani is the leader of the Forces of Change political grouping in the Democratic Republic of Congo and also a former presidential candidate. He was speaking with us from the capital, Kinshasa. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, November 16. Burkina Faso's security minister says militants in the country's north on Sunday killed at least 20 military police in the latest attack on security forces. Analysts say security has been worsening this year, and Burkina Faso's opposition has threatened to protest against the government if the situation does not improve. Henry Wilkins reports from Ouagadougou, Burkina Faso.
The dawn raid took place at a military outpost in war-torn Soum province on Sunday morning. While initial reports said 19 security force personnel and one civilian were killed, the government announced Monday night that the death toll had jumped to 32. The attack is the latest in a long series against security forces and civilians in recent months and represents the deadliest single attack on Burkinabe personnel this year. So, what does it mean for Burkina Faso? Burkina Faso has been battling armed groups linked to Islamic State and Al-Qaeda, as well as local bandits, since 2015. While 2020 saw a decline in violence, this year it has spiked again. Mahamadou Sawadogo is a Burkinabe security analyst. He says this attack is proof that the terrorists are able to bring the fight to the army and are able to lead complex attacks. He says it's also a sign that the peace which was beginning to emerge in that area is disappearing, and we are going to see more and more attacks there. Late last year, negotiations took place between security forces and terror groups in the nearby town of Djibo. The sides reached a détente, but it now appears to have fallen apart. Analysts have said the Annata base, where Sunday's attack took place, was one of the last bases in Soum province, which is still operational. They say this points to a severely overstretched military. While Burkinabe security forces struggle, analysts say the government is reluctant to accept international military support, unlike other countries involved in the Sahel conflict, like Mali and Niger, which have accepted French military personnel. On November 9th, Fedi Kambwego, Burkina Faso's opposition leader, called publicly for urgent measures by the ruling party to stem the violence and threatened to organise widespread protests next month if nothing is done. Andrew Lebovich is an analyst with the European Council on Foreign Relations.
Politically, this is a very complicated time for Burkina Faso's president, in part because he made the security situation and made the fight against terrorism a really important part of his campaign for re-election. And so there's been quite a bit of anger among communities, among opposition politicians.
Speaking to VOA, Lassane Sawadogo, executive secretary for the ruling MPP party, called for patience. He said these are painful events for the whole nation, and what we must keep in mind is that the war against terrorism is a long one. We must not be discouraged. He said the government, with President Roch Kabore, is determined to do as much as it can to overcome terrorism. President Kabore is the first president in Burkina Faso's history without a military background. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Ouagadougou.
The mayor of Liberia's capital, Monrovia, says he and his team are preparing to welcome hundreds of visitors who are expected to travel to Liberia as that country gets ready to launch a year-long commemoration of its bicentennial anniversary beginning February 2022. The theme of the bicentennial is Liberia, the land of return, celebrating 200 years of freedom and pan-African leadership. Mayor Jefferson Koji, who is currently visiting the United States, says the preparation includes giving Monrovia City a facelift while at the same time highlighting the pivotal role that Liberia has played in Africa.
We were fortunate by His Excellency the Ambassador George Manuia, who have appointed us to serve as the second co-chair of the bicentennial. As you may know, the history of our country, we have a very significant role of Liberians. We play a pivotal role in the formation and recognition of the continent of Africa. This leadership on His Excellency Ambassador George Manuia can begin to see how we can project the historical relevance in our pan-African existence. So I think that we want to begin the whole year. It will commence right now. We have the return of the diaspora. But other Liberians will begin this coming December, and will officially be commencing in February, and it will be a whole long year celebration where we can be able to teach our cultural value, identity, and so many other things.
The last time I was in Monrovia, Mr. Mayor, one of the complaints I heard a lot was the cleanliness of the city. I remember when you newly took over as mayor, you began a project of cleaning the city. I wonder, are you still continuing with that program?
Of course, Mr. Bote, you know, cleaning the city, it is a way of life. It is a duty. So cleaning the city, because waste is an ongoing process. We clean the city every other day, but we would like to be very open to you. Yes, we have some enormous challenges in terms of our sustainability, in terms of our logistical support, in terms of our sensitizing the people, Allen Valley Change. When we took over, we launched what you call the We Are for Clean City. The We Are for Clean City, meaning every first Saturday in the morning, where citizens are expected to what you may call community service from 7 o'clock in the morning to 10 o'clock. We're also trying to work with our donor. You see, my point is, Mr. Body, there were mayor before me, and there will be mayor after me. So I'm more interested in a more sustainable plan that even when I'm out of office, whosoever that will take over can be able to find a plan.
I want to ask you about this, Madam Mary Brough. I understand that she has been leading the Monrovia City cleanup campaign. What is her role in the bicentennial celebration? Is she part of your team?
Well, basically, I have a different leadership style, Ms. Abote. I'm a young man who believes in a participatory leadership. If Liberia, if we must develop this country, we must develop this country beyond our personal aggrandizement, beyond individualism. You don't have to be my friend for me to allow you to work for your country. So what we have done in our leadership along with the city council, we thought it was that sanitation remained a fundamental challenge for us. So we created a citizen engagement board, and our board constitute the religious leaders, the young people, the student, the disability, and everyone. So the board is being constituted by 14 Liberians so that they can come with just not just cleaning, they can come with new ideas, they can come with suggestions. We must work together to give this city a facelift. It doesn't matter. You don't have to be my friend. We don't have to go to the same church.
Thank you so much for speaking with us on Daybreak Africa.
Thank you ever so much, Mr. Bote.
Jefferson Koji is the mayor of Liberia's capital, Monrovia. He was speaking with us from Washington, D.C. bloggers and democracy activists from around Africa met in Ivory Coast last week to discuss their role in democracy and the use of internet accessibility in policy formation. Papa Ismailia Jan, a spokesperson for organizers Afriktivists, spoke to Ricky Stryak about their discussions centering around democracy, pushing back against misinformation, and recent laws in countries such as Senegal that gave the government expanded abilities to access private electronic communications of residents.
People are talking about the freedom of the internet, let's say the civil rights, like not civil rights as hers in the United States, but the citizens' right to use internet freely. And all those, we're talking about all those laws that are being taken in our countries, like Senegal. I think Ivory Coast is preparing one. I heard also that DRC, Republic Democratic of Congo, did the same, and other countries are doing it. Some other countries already did it. We are working on that. There are specific discussion about that, and it includes maybe our further programs. Like, we already have a program, a training program on cybersecurity, but right now we are thinking about having a training program about the digital laws in our different country.
Is there an intersection as well with the free flow of information over the internet? Obviously, misinformation is a problem everywhere, especially with the COVID-19 pandemic. And also, even just politically speaking, you know, there are WhatsApp groups that kind of, you know, disperse misinformation. What do you think is the role of people such as yourselves in that discussion about, with the free flow of information, often comes a lot of misinformation?
We have here like at least two panels talking about the misinformation, talking about fake news, and how to use blogger and journalists against fake news. How blogger and journalists can cooperate, work together against fake news. The problem is each of the group, like bloggers say the problem is journalists, journalists say the problem come from the bloggers. So we are tending to have some kind of a way of cooperation between all these entities, bloggers and journalists, so they can fight to have like a more judiciary, a more to be more protected first, to find way to protect them first, but to make them work together against all the question of misinformation. Like,
what do you hope, any kind of concrete action or anything that will come out of this meeting in Abidjan you're all having right now?
We're working right now on a declaration about internet, about the freedom of internet, about freedom of speech, just about that, and that we will submit to the African Union. The second thing, there will be another declaration of Abidjan about everything that is misinformation, fake news, everything that people are facing in our countries. That internet must be central in our development policies. We have the youngest continent in the world. We have the continent that is less connected in the world. It means that there are so many possibilities to reach people. For example, in Burkina Faso this year, agricultures get the seeds and everything with a web application they were using on their phone to be delivered by the government. So there are so many possibilities, and we want to be part of that.
That was Papa Ismailia Jan, spokesperson for Afriktivists. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Abidjan, Cote d'Ivoire. And that's it for this Tuesday, November 16th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all our engineers, I'm James Butte in Washington saying, have a lovely day.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makosa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.